Good afternoon. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Excited to be back for another week. Last week was a lot of fun getting started with this new format, live call-in radio, where we get to share our thoughts and have a back-and-forth discussion about the things that are on our mind. So I'm, as always, really proud to be part of what's going on at KCBX because I'm such a firm believer in radio as a form of therapy. That the mere opportunity to hear other voices coming to us over a box or through our car or in our headphones, having another human voice in our lives throughout the day can help us feel connected to the greater community. So I'm really excited to make this show an opportunity to not just have my voice ring out over the airwaves and hopefully make you feel a little more connected to your world every day, but to also invite you to join in and talk about what it's like to be a part of your world. How was your week since we last talked, since last Tuesday? I was really excited by some of the feedback that I received through my email at thereluctanttherapist@kcbx.org. I appreciate people taking the time to write and share their thoughts and feelings. I appreciate everyone taking the time to call in and share how they feel. This show is going to be whatever you want it to be, depending on where you are week after week. This is your 50-minute hour, we like to say, in the therapy trade. You get 50 minutes to talk about what's on your mind. And often, you know, I'm asked questions when I'm out in the world, therapy questions. Is this normal? Should I be feeling like this? How do I make my children stop behaving like this? And so I figured, you know, why not take it to the people? Because I think we all have questions that we'd like to ask a therapist now and then. I know I have questions I'd like to ask a therapist now and then. But here's your opportunity to call in and talk to a therapist, 805-781-3875. If you don't know, I am a licensed marriage and family therapist. I've been a local practitioner here for about 15 years. If you don't know what a licensed marriage and family therapist does, we actually, our scope of practice focuses on the relational and the challenges of daily living. We work with marriage issues, with family issues, with parenting issues, anything that has to do with improving our interpersonal relationships, strengthening our ability to make interpersonal relationships. That's what we focus on as marriage and family therapists. We do deal with different mental health issues. We will talk to people about anxiety and depression and working through grief. Those functioning problems that we have that are part of being a human on the planet. But I think what I love about being a marriage and family therapist the most is the relational piece, because we're all here on this planet, on this journey for love, to love and to be loved. And the thing that gets in our way from fully enjoying our process of being humans on the planet quite often is our inability to make those connections that bring love into our life, or our inability to nurture the love that's already in our life. And so being able to talk about those ways that we get stuck, or that we feel frustrated, or that we feel like we can't connect with others, is a really important way of enhancing the quality of our lives. And too often we get stuck in our world feeling like we're broken or there's something wrong with us, and we stop trying to reach out and be a part of the greater community. So this is your opportunity to tell your story, because most of us feel better whenever we get a chance to tell our story. We'll start off with Sandra. How are you today, Sandra? What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm doing well, thank you. Thanks. I just had a general question about the best way to re-enter the dating world after not dating for several years. It's kind of like not tracking fashion for a while. I mean, things have changed, and I'm just sort of wondering if you would have any advice on the best way to go about that.
Tell me some of the things you've done.
Well, I live in a smaller town, so I've really been focused on my work to raise my kids as a single mom, and I just didn't date. I just focused on career and, you know, other obligations. So I haven't done a whole lot. Of course, there's the option of doing some online dating, you know, which I'm not completely opposed to. I just find that I'm not, I don't feel very socialized in this area, mm-hmm. you know, and it just seems like there should be some intermediary or maybe baby steps.
Yes.
I don't know. I guess it's just a general question looking for your, you know, your thoughts or insights.
So it's a great question, because it goes along with my feeling that, you know, we are here to make connections and be loved and feel loved, right, and share love And so we want to have that in our life, but we get so caught up in the day-to-day of raising children or taking care of work or taking care of ourselves that it's hard to make those connections. You know, it's almost like dating is set up for being young, right? And a little more free with our time. When you have no other obligations but yourself, it's a little easier to find that. So how do we do it when we're a little further down the road? You know, the online that you mentioned, I was very skeptical about this. I tend to be a reluctant therapist about a lot of things. But mm-hmm. I have to tell you that I've done quite a bit of research on it for the class I teach at Poly on family psychology. And the results are incredible, that people really do have a lot of success with different sites. Some more successful than others. You're going to find that the free sites probably aren't going to have this high quality as matches as the ones that you have to, you know, pay for and go through the profile. But they really have become a modern day dating service where we used to have a Yenta or, you know, a neighbor.
Right.
That the online dating services have kind of taken that place. Then also putting ourselves out there and telling all of our friends that we're interested in dating, right? And putting the word out there a little bit helps to bring people into our lives, doing a little networking on our own behalf. Seems to really be successful. And finally, to try to find one thing that you're really passionate about doing 1 hour a week and doing it and putting yourself in that place will put you in a place where you'll find people that share interests with you. But just 1 hour a week, because a lot of times we'll say, I'm going to change my life and get out there and get back in the dating pool. And then it's so overwhelming, we don't do it at all. So just try to find one thing a week. Maybe it's go to a meeting for a club or a cause you're involved with, or an exercise that you're really excited about, or a lecture that you're interested in. 1 hour a week, if you go to those places that interest you, you will find your cohorts, your like-minded people.
Mm-hmm. And then what about a few things to sort of look for? I hate to use the word vetting, but mm-hmm. you know, it seems like that's kind of what it is. I know that it takes time to really get to know people, so I think, you know, slow is really good. But are there some kind of flags or markers of things that you would suggest looking for to know if this is something to avoid or, you know, pursue?
Like, how do we stop choosing the same person over and over again?
Well, yeah, I guess, you know, that would become involved in, you know, depending on how much I've grown in the time that I haven't dated.
Right.
But just, you know, I think, you know, it used to be a community thing. You kind of knew the guy. Maybe your family knew him. There was some background. Everybody, you know, he was known and therefore accountable.
Right.
The thing about the online thing is that, you know, the whole world's stage. And, you know, there's a way that people can play a role. And it just takes time to kind of deconstruct that.
Absolutely.
So what are some things that you would suggest, you know, someone would watch for?
So just a couple of things that are kind of universal would be if the person tries to move too quickly, push too quickly, if it feels too good, too fast, it is. That's usually a red flag when someone, you know, falls madly in love too quickly and makes you feel like you're the only person ever in this relationship. And, you know, within 3 months, all of a sudden they're talking marriage and moving in. That's a huge red flag because, as you mentioned, it takes, you know, 18 to 24 months to even get out of the smitten part of a relationship and know if it's for real. So I'm really weary of anything that looks too good too quickly. And some of the things that we want to look for is someone who, you know, has had long-term success in relationships, you know, not a serial three-month. Those mm-hmm. would be two markers to start with.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that gives you a place to start. And please call back and let me know if you have success in any of those areas or what worked for you, because I'm sure other people would love to hear.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in, Sandra. You too. If you'd like to be part of this conversation, please join us now at 805-781-3875, where radio becomes an opportunity to get in touch with your story, to tell your story or to ask a question of a therapist if you've always had something on your mind but weren't quite sure if you should go in and see someone for it. Should I pay the money to talk to a therapist about this issue? Is it a big deal or not a big deal? Sometimes it's nice to check that out. Sometimes we underplay the severity of symptoms that we might be experiencing, feelings of depression, feelings of anxiety. And oftentimes we overplay them. We feel like something is much more major than it really turns out to be. I'm a little concerned that what's happened to marriage and family therapy over the last 15, 20 years is that we've been forced in a way because of the movement towards the use of medication so quickly and, you know, people being so afraid of mental health issues becoming severe that we tend to, in some ways, use a hammer when a file would do, you know, that we sometimes go in too quickly, or MFTs are finding themselves having to make diagnosis or get involved in cases that really are out of our scope of practice. And so I really want to try to focus on those relational and tasks of daily living, because if we look at our mental health on a spectrum, you know, mental health is not one finite thing. It's not like a bone in our body that it's either fine or it's broken. You know, there is a spectrum of mental health. And at the far end, we have severe mental health issues, like schizophrenia or chronic bipolar disorder or catatonic states, things that make it impossible for us to function daily outside of an assisted program or some sort of real serious assistance. But then the other end of the spectrum are those struggles of just daily being a human being, generalized anxiety or feeling anxious or stressed or dealing with grief, dealing with relationships, dealing with loss or parenting issues. Now, those are things that quite often resolve themselves with just being able to talk to a good listener or spending time thinking about it. When we need a therapist, when we need to kind of go further somewhere on that spectrum where we need to step in and get help, was when in the symptoms that we're experiencing get in our way of functioning daily in our lives, being able to get up and take care of our children or get to work on time or deal with our daily life. If it's been a chronic period of time, maybe over, you know, 6 weeks that you're not coming around and the symptoms are getting worse, then it's time to step in and bring in a more heavy hitter. Some more support. So what's on your mind? In your 50-minute hour, you can join us. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. It's just about 2:15, and we'd love to hear from you. Brian's waiting to take your phone calls, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Reluctant Therapist on KCBX. This program represents the views of the speaker and is not necessarily those of KCBX. KCBX welcomes the comments of those with their divergent views. Our phone number is 805-781-3875.
So thank you listening for a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is your 50-minute hour. And today I wanted to talk about one of the great misperceptions about therapy or therapists or the process of therapy in general, and that is that going to therapy is about getting advice. People hope that they're going to be able to just walk in and say, here's my problem, tell me what to do, I'm tired, I'm discouraged, I'm stressed out, fix me. You know, because we all need a little gentle nudge or a little push now and then to get through with the struggles of our daily life, like dating questions. How do we get back out there? What are some things that have worked? Let's put it out there and see what other ways people have found help in their dating situations. You know, those are our gentle nudges. But one of the dangers in therapy is expecting that you're going to get advice that you need to follow to be okay. And the other problem with it is when a therapist believes that their job is to give you advice. Because even though it feels real good to have someone tell us what to do, just give me the answer, that inner warrior inside all of us really in some level resents being told what to do. Because think about the last time someone gave you advice, right? How did you feel about hearing their opinion or their ideas? Like as much as you would have even said, tell me what I should do, give me advice, as soon as someone says, here's what you need to do to take care of it, we get defensive. You know, our inner warrior says, don't tell me how to live. I'm going to figure it out. So there's a real slippery slope when it comes to advice. And it's certainly not really really appropriate in the therapeutic relationship. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind today? Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Elizabeth. You know what? I need some advice.
I love that, and I will try to be gentle and not try to fix you.
I have problems sleeping sometimes, so I guess I'm kind of an insomniac, but, okay. You know, it comes and goes. It tends to be a problem when I have something important happening the following day, and I think I kind of psych myself up and get stressed out. But I'm wondering how to counteract it rather than taking, you know, a Tylenol PM or something like that. What should I do? Should I?
Are you still there?
Eating is probably not the best thing to do, but if I don't eat, it's just going to compound the issue. So, what can I do?
Where do we go?
How can I get to sleep? I need to sleep. And then I find the next day, if I haven't got my sleep, obviously I don't perform as well. And
exactly.
And it's kind of snowballs.
Do you find that the next night, then you worry again? Like, oh my gosh, I didn't sleep last?
No. It'll be one night. It's one night out of, you know, it's just periodically, you know. It's, and like I said, and it doesn't take much to get me into this cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I can just think, oh, I need to get up in the morning. It's important that I'm prepared.
And then you're
and
done.
And well rested. Yeah. And then it's like I'm off and
running.
Sleep.
You're an episodic insomniac.
An EE.
Yeah, there we go. We've got a new diagnosis. We'll add it to the DSM. All right, so I'm going to give you a couple tips, and you can tell me if you've tried them, and then we'll go from there. The basic one is the 5 deep breath, right? Just giving over to counting your breath, 5 inhalations, exhalations, and letting everything else go, but just counting as you breathe in and counting as you exhale. And you'll find that oftentimes people can't even make it 5 breaths without falling asleep. So that sometimes will help. If your brain is already off and running, then your brain's going to say, this isn't going to work. So the other little more unorthodox suggestion is to just give in on those nights and say, you know what, I'm probably not going to sleep tonight, so I'm going to check my DVR for some shows that I've been looking forward to watching, or I'm just going to lay here and just accept that I won't sleep. And quite often, just giving ourselves permission to not sleep helps us get over the hump.
Right. Yeah. And I've done that. I've gotten up and turned the TV on and fallen asleep on the couch.
Yeah.
And that's where I get my sleep that night.
Which if it's an episodic thing, I'm not so worried about, because once in a while, maybe it's good to, you know, to shake up our system and then realize, oh, the next day I went back to normal and I'm okay.
Right.
You know, I think maybe you should embrace that this is a wonderful problem to have, because it's once in a while. And seriously, if it gives you an opportunity to eat something that, you know, you usually wouldn't, maybe you can change the way you view it as, hey, this is my opportunity to, you know, explore the night Brian, the night person that I am. Let the night Alan come out.
Yeah.
And then I think it'll also help the next day, because psychologically, if we feel like, if we keep saying to ourselves, oh my gosh, I didn't get enough sleep, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to do this, you know, that hurts our performance. But quite often you might find if you don't get enough sleep and you get out, you might be awesome that day, and it's the following day that we collapse. So, I wish I had a better answer, but hopefully that'll give you a way to start.
No, that's good. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, and have a great day.
All right.
Hey, Jackie, you're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm in the car, so hopefully you can hear me.
I can.
I was calling because it's sort of a question hybrid comment. I have had kind of a minor anxiety since I was a little child, and it's been interesting in my older years to share my stories of anxiety with my peers, because what I've realized is that most people have anxiety, and I wouldn't say everyone I know, but maybe more than half of my friends and family deal with some sort of anxiety, and sharing the stories has been some of the most helpful experiences with that. And I was wondering if you had any suggestions or ideas of how people can share their journey through mental health with each other. It's not an easy thing to bring up with your friends and family, but once I've started talking about it with friends, it makes everything feel lighter. And I wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, I love that you called in to share that, because that's my experience also, that anxiety and feelings of depression and stress are universal, and that we've been somehow sold this idea that if we feel any of those things, there's something wrong with us and that we should do whatever we can to fix it. But, you know, low levels of these things are not unhealthy. You know, it's when we can't function that they become unhealthy. But I agree with one of the things, my notes for today was that the opportunity to tell our story to others actually lightens our load, exactly as you said. And someone else had talked about, you know, how the great effectiveness of therapy is in group situations, you know, groups that talk about how they deal with these issues. I don't know, you know, if that's necessary to join an anxiety support group, but I really encourage what you're doing, that every time you out yourself a little bit about having these anxious feelings, it makes you closer to your inner circle. They feel more bonded to you. And so to keep kind of sharing that and sharing ideas. And that was really the crux of wanting to do this radio program, because so many people were coming to my office with such similar stories that I felt like if we could just all say them out loud, once we say something out loud, it doesn't have the same power over us. Do you agree?
Yeah, and I guess this is my time to say it out loud.
Then own it. You're owning it, Jackie.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you doing the show. I'll call back again next week.
Please do. And keep breathing, because that really is at the core of reducing most symptoms with generalized anxiety and low-level feelings of depression and stress.
Sounds great. The caller before me, I could really relate to.
Oh, good.
Had a nice to hear his story.
Have a great day.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Hi, Charlie. You're on the air with the Reluctant Therapist.
Yeah, Charlie Bolero here. Yeah, we have... I met you at the little get-together we had a year or so ago on the get to know the volunteers.
That was a fun day. Good food.
It was. Anyway, yeah, I'm sort of going back to some of the things you were talking about last week.
Okay.
Unfortunately, our health, as you know, I'm a retired surgeon, so I'm Air Force, so I'm aware of some of the problems in the healthcare. Unfortunately, the pressure and such has relied on medication rather than counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm saying is, I've talked to counselors, some that I've been involved with myself, but sometimes I've talked to therapists, like in 1 to 2 sessions, they sort of see what the person needs, but the counseling is guiding the person to come to their own come to their own solutions.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, I certainly agree that the depression, anxiety, compulsion, we all have that, reacting to grief, and if it lasts too long, then it becomes pathological and disabling.
Yes.
And recognizing when that, and also, of course, depression is a major. It's one of the leading causes, I think, of teenage suicide, and unfortunately, the tendency to medicate rather than dealing with the problems, that's I think it's a problem there.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think it's not that it's anyone's intention to harm anyone, right? Or to medicate someone's problem away. But I think we're dealing with a limitation in our resources with insurance and, unfortunately, financially, therapy takes a while. If there is a chronic issue with depression or bullying or feeling left out or, social skills, it takes a while to build confidence in social skills. And without the support of therapy or group work or being able to have someone hear your story, witness your life experience, that compounds a lot of the issues. And so we keep getting back to this lack of time to address, mental health issues, and then they compound and get worse and get worse. And then we get into serious trouble where we might have suicide or someone, shooting, someone else.
Oh, yeah.
you know, that really is where we get into trouble. And again, I don't want to minimize severe mental health issues, but I really want to focus on, you know, ways that if we were to spend more time listening to each other, to sitting with someone and letting them tell their story without judgment, right? Without feeling like we have to fix them or give them advice, but just allowing someone to say, here's what it is for me to be a human on the planet. Here's what I feel on a daily basis. And to just be able to say those things out loud and have someone say, I heard your story and I appreciate what you go through. That alone can have incredible mental health benefits.
Amen. Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, sometimes when they're looking at particularly young people that have been medicated, you know, there's a certain, you know, suicide rate of people that are on medication. My kind of gut feeling, it's not the fault of the medication. Mm. It's the problem of not the problem of not having spending the time to deal and guide the issues. And I think yes. Medication, like a lot of things, can help with the symptoms,
yes.
But and give people a little space to deal with the underlying problems.
Yeah, I love what you said, Charlie, because that is true. You know, there is a need for medications in times that, you know, when we have a horrible headache, Advil can get us over the hump so that we can function. It's the same if depression becomes such that we're not able to get out of bed or to get to the daily living, then it's going to be hard to do those things that boost our serotonin that would reduce depression. So medication for a very short term, you know, can help us have the energy to do our own healing. But it's, again, like you said, it's time. It's all about time. How do we find, you know, how do we take the time to be there, really be there for other people so that they can heal in their time of need? I really appreciate you calling in today.
Anyway, yeah, again, I'm very glad that you have more time to actually share, because I've heard some of your programs and you've come up with some really great insights and thoughts, and it's great to be able to expand on them. Anyway, we'll be back again.
I appreciate it, and I look forward to hearing from you, Charlie. Have a great day.
Right.
If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call in at 781-3875, 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hey, Mark, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. So I have a more adolescent heartbreak question.
Oh, okay.
More, how do you know when it's over? You know, it's kind of, I guess I can give you the basis for
Please
the relationship.
Do.
It was
Please
just.
Do.
I mean, I relocated, and then I was kind of depressed and wasn't doing anything and kind of took that out on her, on my life. Now things are better, but now she's gone.
Okay, that's...
And we still, I mean, there's still love there, but it's just kind of now she's interested in doing other things at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And so tell me the time frame. Has this been months, weeks?
Since the breakup or since the whole relationship?
Give me the whole relationship and since the breakup.
Okay, whole relationship was about 2 years, and breakup has been about, it's coming on about 5 or 6 months.
That's a long time.
For a breakup or for a relationship?
No, it's a long time, you know, in the relationships. 5 months, you either are hopefully starting to turn the corner, or you're deciding whether or not you're going to give this a go again. And I'm sensing that you're saying we're at a crossroads.
Yeah, I mean, I am usually pretty, I've always been good at walking away from things, or I've always been on the other side of the breakup, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
but
okay.
This time, things seem a lot different. Like, I couldn't do anything about it, you know. I guess it was my first real broken heart.
So, we want to talk about how do we deal with a broken heart, or do you want to talk about trying to fix this?
I would say fixing would be better. Broken heart comes next.
All right, so I'm going to give you two quick things. One is the book, it's called A Breakup Because It's Broken. And it's a phenomenally simply written but very profound book. So I highly recommend it because it might help bring some clarity to how you're feeling since this is kind of new experience. And then the how to fix part, you know, that becomes a trickier thing because you have to have some understanding of what your long-term goal for this relationship is. And if the two of you don't have that same long-term picture it makes it more challenging to come back together. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. No, I see. I mean, it was kind of, it's been more of like a maybe in 5 years, but I've done the maybe in 5 years with other people before.
Exactly.
So I think I know what that means.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I think that I would encourage you to get a clear picture of, you know, what is the long term for this? Do I want, because this is just between you and I now, okay, Mark? Is it we want to get back together so that I can feel better about the next breakup because it wasn't such a surprise? Or do I want to get back together because I really want this long term? So those are two things I want you to grapple with and pick up that book too. And then call me next week and let's talk.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling in. It's 2:30 and you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and if you'd like to be part of the conversation, please call in at 805-781-3875. We'll be right back to talk to Stacy and Dale. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to The Reluctant Therapist on KCBX. It's time for the KCBX Community Calendar. Santa Barbara County is looking for volunteers to help with the upcoming countywide homeless vulnerability survey. Training is this Saturday afternoon at the Earl Warren Showgrounds. For all the details, go to the community calendar at kcbx.org. Stay tuned for Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock, then at 4, it's Marketplace. All things considered is at 4:30. You're listening to KCBX.
Welcome back to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Thanks so much for listening today. We're kind of all over the place. This is your 50-minute hour. And if you had an opportunity to talk to a therapist and ask a question, what would it be? Stacy, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Elizabeth. I hope you had a good week.
Thank you. I did. How was yours?
Good, good. I just wanted to comment on the caller that Charlie called in about. You said something about medication and it being, you're using it for short term mm-hmm. if you have issues with depression and stuff. And I guess it's because I'm such a proponent of medications for when you do get the right cocktail that I had to call in. There is so many people out there that when they start feeling good, they stop taking their medication. Mm-hmm. And as we've seen, especially in the media, especially in San Luis County, that because we don't have, in effect, Laura's Law. I don't know if how many people are out there are familiar with Laura's Law, but if they stop taking their meds and they end up committing some horrendous, and I want to call it an injustice or mm-hmm. a crime to themselves, or something happens where the consequences are just irrevocable. And so,
absolutely.
Wellness means different things to different people, but I think we all agree that when we have the component of a behavioral issue and a mental health issue and a chemical imbalance, that, you know, everything needs to be treated equally. But I get very on my soapbox about finding the right advocacy for the medicinal aspect of, you know, the mental health. So every time that I hear something about it, because it has worked for me, and it's not by not trial and error, of course, but I just, you know, I know what you say when you're saying if you have it, you know, the grieving of a loved one or mm-hmm. even, you know, something like that, but like, you know, if it lasts, like you say, you know,
6 weeks or more,
yeah, if you can't function,
right,
you know, then you need to look into it. But you know, if this is a chemical imbalance with most people, and you know it, you said something about, you know, schizophrenics or bipolar people that require, you know, assisted living or institutionalized. And there are, I would say, you know, at least I didn't get statistics. I almost called and asked County Mental Health. But there are, you know, at least 15 to 20% of the mental health consumers that live here in the county that are living independently that mm-hmm. are diagnosed with those, I don't even want to call them maladies, because we have mental health problems, mental health issues.
I really appreciate your take on it, and I know that you're passionate, so I always love to hear you call in.
I'm going to be your weekly devil's advocate.
That's what you can. And just know that I, because I'm a family therapist, I'm looking at the 80%, and I worry about the over-medicating at 80%. Yeah. So you
I'll
go back and forth.
I'll call in and I'll say, here's everybody that can do when they.
I appreciate it, Stacey. Have a great week, and I'll look forward to hearing from you again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hi, Dale. You're on the air with the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi there. Well, this sort of ties in, I guess, with the previous caller.
Okay.
I'm actually dating someone who is on medication for the depression and the anxiety situation. And I guess my question is what, you know, mostly it's social. It's about crowds, and it's about, you know, being in a room packed full of people and that sort of thing, feeling awkward, feeling anxious. I guess I'm wanting to know what would be a good thing that I could do to kind of facilitate her wellness in those situations more than just say, oh, come on, it's, you know, you're imagining it.
Thank
because
you.
Because a lot of times I think she is, but I don't, you know, I know it's very real for her, even though I don't completely get it. I know that she gets it and that she's uncomfortable. And I could make it somehow so that she could be in those places and have her, you know, not be so uncomfortable.
Dale? The first thing I want to say is that I love you for calling in and wanting to do what's best for your partner. I think that's great. tell me some things you've done to try to make her feel more comfortable in those situations.
It's fairly new. We've only dated about a month and a half, and it hasn't come up a lot of times. Mm-hmm. We were driving to a shop one time. We got to the shop, and the very small shop, and the parking lot was packed, and she just kept driving. She's like, if it's that full in there, I can't go in.
Mm-hmm.
And not wanting to press because she was driving, and she's kind of an anxious driver anyway. I'm just like, okay, we'll come back later. We'll do it another day. You know, I would like to, you know, sometimes we'll be at a party surrounded by friends. It's a big party going on, and she's just uncomfortable. And to me, to my mind, there's no need. There's no reason she should feel uncomfortable. And she does. And I'd like to, you know, other than always just like leave and go home and be safe and comfortable in some little cocoon, to kind of be able to kind of maintain and realize, look around and see what's happening and know there isn't anything happening to be anxious about. But that doesn't change her, you know?
Right.
So
there's a couple things then, Dale. One is, since this is new, one of the things you're learning is that this is probably not a short-term experience. This comes with the package of this person that you're getting to know. And we all bring stuff to the relationship, right? I mean, we all bring our stuff. And this is part of her stuff. So part of the reason that we date and we don't mate right away is that we need to get to know, you know, how we work with someone else. Do our our little nuances work with each other. So what you did, your instinct was great to, you know, when she was feeling anxious getting in the parking lot, to say, hey, let's just come back another time and just to blow it off. Because I can tell you from my experience over 32 years with my husband, I tend to be the more anxious person. And he learned very early on that when I was starting to feel really anxious, if he said, hey, do you want to go for a walk? Or, you know, should I come home from work? Or, you know, what can I do? As soon as I knew that I had an out, that he was going to, you know, come if I needed him to or take me out, it would help the anxiety relax. It was always that feeling that I couldn't get away that would make it worse. And so having a partner over all these years that could kind of sense across the room or could see when I wasn't uncomfortable and would say, hey, let's just leave if this isn't fun, or, you know, that taking that pressure off of me really helped make the situations easier.
Okay.
All right. So I hope those two things help. And I appreciate you really caring enough to call in and explore that.
Well, thank you. Also, would it be advantageous to sort of suggest, okay, yeah, we can leave anytime you want. How would you feel about trying 15 more minutes and see how you feel then?
Maybe
or is that pushing it?
I would wait and see, because you're early on, you know, a month into. Let's let her play it out, because she's trying to gain confidence and comfort with you too. She's trying to see what kind of person you are. Can she trust you? You know, are you the be there kind of guy? Or, you know, how's this going to be? So if you are comfortable with just letting her take the lead and saying, hey, however you want to play out, then I think that's an important way to start.
Yeah. Okay.
Call back again.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hi, Penny. Thanks for calling in to the Reluctant Therapist.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so glad that you called in. What's on your mind?
Good. Well, I guess I'm going to bring the topic back around to your initial thoughts on advice.
Oh, yes.
I grew up performing, and this was one instance when advice came to me, and though I didn't realize it later, it really benefited me. Mm-hmm. So I was used to do, you know, in my early teens, dancing and singing. And this comment came after one performance when one of the other moms came up to me and complimented me. You know, she said, you did a great job. I really loved your performance. And as I usually did then, I, you know, said thank you, but, you know, I could have done it better, and I messed up here, and I didn't do this there. And this mom said to me, you know, well, you really need to learn how to take advice. And at first I was really offended by it. You know, I thought, gosh, she's reprimanding me, and I was almost embarrassed, you know. But the comment stuck with me, obviously, and it's taken me many years to kind of come to terms with that, and I think it really says something about how we view ourselves if you can take compliments for what they are and internalize them. And, you know, I think I realized even back then at a young age that there was something wrong with my view of myself, that I couldn't accept this compliment, this beautiful compliment this woman gave me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was one instance when advice, though, at first, you know, like you said, it's that inner warrior. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, at first were put off by it, but I have really come to see the benefits of, that advice can have as well. So
I love that. And it's true, because the advice of learn how to take a compliment feels like it should always be a nice thing to hear. But our first reaction usually is like, don't tell me what to do. And what a beautiful thing to carry, because if we can learn to take compliments, that is a way that we feel connected to the greater community. And in times in our life when we are feeling less than or worthless, to be able to remember a couple compliments we heard and really own them is huge. And it's unfortunate that it takes us years out of adolescence when we really need those compliments, right? When we most need to feel a little more supported, that it's hardest to hear them. So I appreciate you bringing that to the table, and I hope you have a great day.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye, Penny.
Okay, bye.
Hi, Sal. Thanks for calling the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to make a short comment because I've been kind of listening to your show.
Okay.
And I've gone to see psychologists in the past. I don't really have a major problem, but I've had a health problem from when I was a kid. I had a brain tumor, and it's inoperable. I still have it, and it's led to a lot of depression and all that stuff. But I noticed that psychologists and all the therapy, they never emphasize the way you can deal with it yourself through, like, exercise and activities like cooking and reading. There's so many things out there that you can help yourself. And I've used it, like, all my life. And every time I go to a psychologist or some, I really don't agree with what they say, because right away they want to put you on a medication that slows you down and doesn't want to give you that impetus to do anything. And you really got to kind of force yourself to have a constructive itinerary of what you're going to do. And that helps a lot. Because I've coped with it, like I said, all my life.
Well, thank you. You know, Sally, I really appreciate what you're saying, because, again, we've got to look at mental health on the spectrum, right? That there are some cases that are very severe mental health issues that need intensive care. But when we're looking at the spectrum of mental health where we can be our own advocates, that it is important to have someone saying, you have the ability to turn this around. You know, and that's what great therapy with an MFT can be, is someone who's in your corner, who hears your story, who hears the ways that you're struggling or suffering, and then helps you find the answers within yourself, right? That encourages you to find your inner strength, to find your way of coping, to find ways that you can adapt to things that may not be perfect in your life. I mean, and I think in our culture where we're looking a little more for quick fixes, or insurance pressures us to come up with, you know, a fix right away, or we're concerned that if we miss something that someone is suffering from and they end up hurting themselves, that we tend to sometimes rush in with too heavy a prescription session when really just hearing our clients tell their story and talk about, you know, what it is to be them, and then helping them find a plan for greater exercise, for learning to take deep breaths, for how to make friends when you're feeling isolated or alone, or how to, you know, cope with things that might feel disabling, but you can do something with. I mean, you're hitting on kind of the essence of my reluctant therapist world, is we need to make our clients their own best therapist. We need to help them be their own best therapist. Does that?
That's the idea. Well, a lot of times I hear homeless people and people on the bus talking about, well, I got to go get this medication, and they're changing it, and all these side effects that they got, and they're listless. And I said, Jesus, I've never resorted to that, and I feel healthier than they do.
Yeah.
And they're a lot younger than I am.
It's heartbreaking. It really is.
Yeah. I just when I hear stuff like that, I just say, gee, they never talk about, you know, activities, and just there's just so much out there, books out there to help yourself, which I've read all my life. And life is very challenging. There's a lot of things in life that are going to set you back, but
it's
you got to kind of cope with it.
As best we can, right? And with a good
right.
support system. Thanks so much for calling, Sal. It's 2:45. You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I'd love to hear from you today. If you'd like to call in, 805-781-3875. What's on your mind? What would you like to ask the therapist? And what's some advice you've gotten in your life? Good advice or bad advice? And did you take it? And is there ever a time that advice can be helpful? We'll be right back to talk to Fred on The Reluctant Therapist.
You're listening to The Reluctant Therapist on KCBX. Tomorrow during this time, between 2 and 3 p.m., it's the show On Being. It's easy to despair at all the bad news and horrific pictures that we see every day. Zen Abbott and medical anthropologist Joan Halifax says this kind of empathy works against us. Krista Tippett talks with her about finding strength instead of a burnout when dealing with the stress and compassion in our personal lives and in the world. That's On Being tomorrow at 2 o'clock. You're listening to KCBX.
Welcome back to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Hi, Fred. You're on the air. What's on your mind this week?
Hi, Elizabeth. Thanks for taking my call.
Glad you called in.
Hey, I went through a divorce about 5 years ago, and it was painful.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into therapy, and I kept on getting the feeling that towards before I finally left therapy that he was saying that I need to completely let this go and move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And to tell you the truth, I found that over the years, I enjoy, not, I wouldn't say enjoy, but I like to go back and have those same sort of feelings that I had when the marriage was good.
Mm-hmm.
And am I in denial? I mean, should I really let this go? Because I don't think it's not enabling me to function. But there's times that I kind of like to go back and reflect on good things and so I don't think I really have to totally let it go. What do you think?
Well, one of the key things you said was it doesn't impact your functioning, that you still are able to enjoy your life on a daily basis. And it kind of brings me to the side thing about journaling. Do you do any journaling in your life?
No, I used to, but maybe I should start again, you think?
Well, it's interesting because James Pennebaker did a whole bunch of research on the mental health benefits of journaling. And it was great to have some real tangible results because a therapist's favorite thing to assign is to journal. And it was wonderful that Pennebaker actually found that there were therapeutic benefits. And one of the benefits was that we had an increased sense of well-being when we were able to go back over our journals and see ways that we've grown or remember ways that our life was great or to, you know, appreciate those feelings we had at one point and where we are today. And I think there's a little bit of that you're talking about, that there's, you know, it's nice to revisit those places in our lives that felt good because it can inspire us to look for those feelings again in other places in our life, right?
Right, go ahead.
You know, so I think that journaling is such a beautiful thing, even if it's, you know, once a year or once a month, to get down on paper kind of what you're experiencing, and not just I woke up and fed the dog today, but how you're feeling, how your body feels, how you feel emotionally, so that you can go back and check in. And because the revisiting those good times in our life can remind us that it can happen again, right? There's, as long as we wake up, there's a possibility for another better day. And we need to remember what it felt like in good days so we can get back there.
Well, very good. I think this advice just made me feel better already, so I appreciate it. I really like the journaling aspect, which I'm going to start. So it's been wonderful to talk to you today, and I look forward to the next time.
I hope you call in again. Have a wonderful day, Fred.
I certainly will.
Hi, Jennifer. You're on the air of the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm thrilled about your show today because I love the topic, what's the best advice you've ever gotten? And the best advice I've ever gotten was listening to your gut.
Okay.
And I think so many people forget to listen to that, and they listen to other people, and then they begin to doubt themselves. So I thought you might talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we talk about our gut in a lot of different forms, you know, go with your gut, I feel it in my gut, I feel sick to my stomach, or I just had a sense. There's a lot of lore around our stomach and our gut feeling. And it's interesting because we have a huge nerve center that resides right there in that solar plexus part of our body. And it is constantly reacting with all of the different signals in our brain and our body. You know, it's kind of like our the brain of our computer system in our body. And so those signals are coming to us more quickly than our conscious mind can actually comprehend. So there is a lot of science behind the idea of going with our gut and trusting those signals that we're getting. So when's some time that you followed your gut and it paid off?
Well, usually my very first instinct is the right mm-hmm. one, but then my monkey mind takes over and then I start listening to other people or other voices that say that, you may be wrong. But I think for me as a mother, that gut intuitive feeling has always been right on. And it has paid off because I've raised three beautiful daughters. So, but I wish I had been able to do that in other areas of my life as well. So it's a good subject.
I wonder if the older we get, the more we learn to trust our gut and the more it pays off. Maybe that's the beauty in aging, right?
I would absolutely have to agree with that. Yeah, I think that media and social networks and TV tell us when we're young and impressionable how we're supposed to be. And as we age, we come back to our essence and know exactly where we're going and what we're supposed to do.
I know. That's really well said. We really do. It's almost like we spend our whole life trying to get back to the confidence we had when we were five.
Yes. Twirling.
Twirling and twirling. Thanks so much for calling, Jennifer. Enjoy your day.
Thank you. I enjoy your show.
Thanks. Call next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Hi, Dawn. You're on the air with the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind?
Well, this is only the second time I've caught your show, but I just want to say how much I like people who help other people. Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. And then you were asking for the best advice people had ever gotten. And one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was from a former pastor who, in the context of premarital counseling, but it's applied to so many things all my life, mm-hmm. which is you have to get your expectations in line with reality.
Mm. Interesting. So
very powerful. Not to lower them below, you know, high, but in line with reality.
Well, it's so great because if you were listening to the TED Talk Hour right before my show, today's topic was about happiness and there was a lot of different takes on it. But one of the things that came up was this idea that, you know, we have made this goal of happiness so huge and unattainable that it tends to make us more unhappy. And I remember, you know, being told by my dad quite often when I was young to follow the 60% rule, that if you're feeling good 60% of the time, you're winning, you know, that if you, you know, get 70%, you've hit a home run. But if we always shoot for 60%, then we're always going to feel satisfied in life, and life is a great joy. And I think that's important.
Happiness seems to be a byproduct of living, you know, honestly, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's going to definitely be one of the topics in the upcoming weeks is this whole further exploration of happiness, because I have a lot of ideas on it. So hopefully you'll call in and share your thoughts on happiness too.
Great.
Thanks for calling, Dawn. Thanks for listening.
You're welcome. Bye.
So you're listening to The Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And if you'd like to call in with your thoughts, so we have a few more minutes today, 805-781-3875. We start off talking about advice and how there's this misperception that therapy is about going to get advice. And really, good therapy has very little to do with advice and has a lot more to do with helping our clients to find their own insights, to encourage them to build on the strengths they already have, or to reconnect with some of that inner wisdom or inner knowledge that we always have inside of us, but we lose our way. And that's common in our culture because there's so many opportunities for input. There's so many ways that people want to share what they think is right or tell us how we should be living. All you have to do is watch a half hour of television and you're going to feel depressed because every other commercial is about ways that we as humans are not okay, right? We're not pretty enough. We're not strong enough. We're not tall enough. We're not making enough money. I mean, there's this constant reminders of ways that we're not measuring up, and that can weigh on us to the point where we lose confidence and we end up wanting to talk to our friends or talking to a therapist to say, gosh, there's all these ways that I'm broken and I don't even know if I'm worthy of dating or I'm worthy of loving or I'm worthy of having a job. And a good therapist is going to help you refine your center, is going to help you refine your true north so that you can get in touch with that gut feeling, that inner wisdom, that we ultimately do know what is best for us and that we can have glitches along the way and that's okay, and that we all carry some sort of baggage with us in some form, and that sometimes our baggage is really difficult to carry and at other times we just kind of tote it along and we're doing okay. I know that the idea of giving advice feels so good, myself as a therapist, and even on the air, it's like, oh, there's so many things I'd love to say. But ultimately, telling someone what to do doesn't have half the power as helping someone find out what's right for them. So here's a couple things to remember. When you want to tell someone something, you really feel like you have the right answer, never start advice with "have you ever," or "you should," or "you need to." All of those will make someone feel defensive. But if you really want to share with someone, you know, bring it to your level of, here's something that happened to me. I don't know if it'll help or not, but here's an experience I had. So I appreciate you listening to our show, The Reluctant Therapist. This conversation has gone quickly today. And as we come to the end of our 50-minute session, I look forward to continuing the discussion. If you'd like to join me on Facebook, just look up The Reluctant Therapist, or you can reach me by email at thereluctanttherapist@kcbx.org. I appreciate all of your participation and your willingness to build community in this way. And I really look forward to our next week's topic. We might be talking about changes. Until then, listen fully, connect with others, tell your story, and remember, you have the answers inside. You just need to find a way to hear them. Thank you for listening. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and thank you for supporting local public radio.
The preceding program represented the views of the speaker and not necessarily those of KCBX. KCBX welcomes the comments of those with divergent views. Our phone number is 805-549-8855.